Welcome and Happy New Year! This is Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Our first story is Cherokee Nation Launches Digital Dictionary to Support Language Revitalization from Native News Online by Levi Rickert. Cherokee Nation leaders and Cherokee language speakers joined representatives from Kiwa Digital Limited on Tuesday to launch the new Cherokee Language Dictionary app during an event at the Durbin Feeling Language Center. Every Cherokee family, no matter where they live, can now carry this resource in their pocket, Principal Chief Hoskin Jr. said. This app represents our sovereignty, our knowledge, and our commitment to keeping the Cherokee language strong for generations to come. Durbin Feeling completed the first Cherokee language dictionary 50 years ago, laying the foundation for the tribe's modern language revitalization work. In 2025, Cherokee Nation partnered with Kiwa Digital Limited to digitize the resource and make it publicly accessible as a mobile app. Team members from Kiwa Digital traveled internationally for the launch. The company specializes in indigenous language preservation through digital tools. Chief Hoskin first announced the partnership during his State of the Nation address at the Cherokee National Holiday. Chief Hoskin and I have always said that it is critical we not only protect and save the Cherokee language, but that we perpetuate the language so that it continues to grow within our Cherokee families and communities, Deputy Chief Brian Warner said. We can harness the power of technology to help us teach others how to speak Cherokee, and the Cherokee Language Dictionary app is a great resource. The app is available for download on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. It currently includes more than 6,000 Cherokee words, audio recordings, grammar notes, phonetics, syllabary, and biographical information on first language speakers. Cherokee Nation translators and Kiwa staff plan to continually add new entries. In a few months, Kiwa Digital took what we had documented of our language and made it accessible to our citizens, said Howard Payden, executive director of the Cherokee Language Department. Their efforts will prevent the erosion of our language from continuing and empower us to revitalize and normalize this language in our communities. Our goal is to get at least 25,000 to 50,000 words on the app in order to have a more comprehensive overview of the language. The app also includes advanced search tools, pronunciation guides, and a private AI learning assistant. Data is stored on a secure AWS platform. During Tuesday's launch, the tribe encouraged users to submit feedback through the app to support ongoing updates. As an indigenous-owned company from New Zealand, we are honored to support the Cherokee Nation in developing this groundbreaking digital resource, said Jill Tattersall, executive director of Kiwa Digital. We look forward to Cherokee community feedback to help this treasured resource grow in impact and value. In October, the Cherokee Nation hosted its 7th annual First Language Cherokee Speakers Gathering, where Chief Hoskin announced the $2.3 million from the Tribe's Public Health and Wellness Fund Act to support the Language Development's Peer Recovery Program, Home Care for Fluent Elders in Vulnerable Health, Repairs for Speaker Homes, and the Little Cherokee Seeds Program. The Durbin Feeling Act of 2019, authored by Chief Hoskin and Deputy Chief Warner, with support from the Council of the Cherokee Nation, continues to drive the largest language investment in tribal history. This year's language budget is nearly $25 million, and the Act provides more than $20 million annually for language programs, totaling more than $68 million in capital projects to date. The Cherokee Nation workforce is also adopting new language proficiency incentives. Entry-level second language learners who meet program requirements will receive a 50-cent per hour raise and a $200 bonus, with additional tiers for more advanced learners. Fluent speakers will receive a $2.50 per hour increase and a $1,000 bonus. Up next, Ethics Complaints alleges former Navajo Nation Chief of Staff accepted gifts from contractor. a special prosecutor has filed an ethics complaint in Navajo Nation District Court against Patrick Sandoval, the former chief of staff to Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin, alleging multiple violations of the Navajo Nation's ethics and government law. Special Prosecutor Kyle T. Naback filed the complaint Friday, accusing Sandoval of requesting and accepting more than $10,000 in gifts or loans for himself or for President Nigrin from Innovative Electric, a company that was seeking payment from the Office of the President and Vice President in excess of $500,000 at the time. According to the filing, Sandoval served as chief of staff from January 2023 through March 2025, a position that carried significant authority and influence over Navajo Nation contractual and financial obligations. During that period, the complaint alleges Sandoval accepted personal financial benefits from Innovative Electric while determining or influencing whether the Navajo Nation would satisfy the company's claimed debt. The complaint states that the gifts or loans were not obtained from a regular lending institution, were not insignificant in value, and were not motivated by a family or social relationship. Instead, the filing alleges the benefits were accepted while the lender had or was seeking to obtain a business or financial relationship with the Navajo Nation, conduct prohibited under 2 NNC 3756. Naback also alleges a violation of 2 NNC 3744, which requires public officials to conduct themselves in a manner that reflects credit upon the Navajo people and government, asserting that Sandoval's actions eroded the trust of the Navajo people. The filing further states that the Office of Hearings and Appeals is conflicted from hearing matters related to the Office of the President and Vice President because it is housed within the executive branch under the ultimate authority of the President. As a result, the complaint was filed in district court. As remedies, the special prosecutor is seeking to bar Sandoval from appointment or employment in any Navajo Nation public office for 5 years, require forfeiture of compensation and benefits for a period ranging from 30 days to 1 year, issue a public reprimand to be entered into his permanent record, and order restitution. Naback has asked the Navajo Nation District Court to schedule a hearing to review the alleged ethics violations. Our next story comes from Indian Country Today. A bright path forward, Dickinson College builds a new center in Carlisle, by Charles Fox. Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Rain fell through the night, bringing a welcomed healing to land that still carried the despondent echoes of its days near the notorious Carlisle Indian Industrial School. By morning, a cleansed landscape with blue sky and sunshine greeted the several hundred people gathered at Dickinson College. It was a day to heal and celebrate, to shed tears and exchange smiles and hugs. The crowd gathered in a circle for a ground blessing at the site where Dickinson College's new Jim Thorpe Center for the Futures of Native Peoples will be constructed, a move that will allow the existing center to grow from a small location on a side street into an educational resource that will be a place of healing, connection, and restoration. The new center, made possible by a $20 million gift from alumnus and philanthropist Samuel G. Rose, will create a building in the center of campus, offering spaces for ceremonial gatherings, classrooms, special programming, and an art gallery featuring indigenous or indigenous-themed works. It's intentionally designed that when our native people come here, there's a space for us to heal and gather, and a place where we can celebrate indigenous narratives through art and through story, said Dr. Amanda Cheromia, Kaiwaka, Laguna Pueblo, executive director for the current center and a descendant of 7 students who attended the Carlisle boarding school. It will bear the name of the acclaimed Olympian Jim Thorpe, Sack and Fox, a Carlisle alumnus who won 2 gold medals in the 1912 Olympics. I've been waiting for this all my life, said Sandra Chanchali, Lakota 77, president emerita of the Carlisle Indian School Project and former vice president of Circle Legacy, a Native organization based in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Maybe this is a new beginning. A tidal wave. To Native Americans, Carlisle will never just be another sleepy college town. Despite its American facade, it will always be cloaked in negative connotations and traumas caused by the Carlisle Indian Industrial School, which operated from 1879 to 1918. It was the first federally funded off-reservation boarding school and served as the model for similar schools in the United States and Canada. The school grounds can produce a wrenching emotional journey. In some cases, visitors are retracing the footsteps of ancestors who never made it back to their families. The school is a dark chapter in U.S. history that changed forever the lives of approximately 7,800 Native students who attended the school, their families, and communities. It is also a chapter unknown to many Americans, a chapter that some would like to see erased. Its difficult history has made the task of creating an education center, museum, or memorial devoted to the subject matter with the necessary funding an arduous task. In the past several decades, numerous ideas have been proposed for a building to house the center in this south central Pennsylvania town. None ever came to fruition. They all had hurdles they could never overcome. Pennsylvania's negative reputation for its treatment of Native Americans dating back to the mid-1700s, the lack of a federally recognized tribe in the state, no willing investors, little state or local government support, and a growing shroud of erasure. An $800,000 grant from the Mellon Foundation in 2023 allowed Dickinson College to create the existing Center for the Futures of Native Peoples. The grant, however, provided strictly startup funding for the staffing programs and for developing Indigenous curricula, but did not finance any physical space dedicated to Native gatherings or special events. An older brick residence, cookhouse, that was being used mainly for storage by the college on the edge of campus became the initial home for the center. Even then, President Joe Biden's announcement in 2024 that the school grounds would become a national monument failed to initiate plans for a National Park Service visitor center, despite expectations that the then Interior Secretary, Deb Haaland, could serve as intermediary among the parties. Hope was plunging in 2025 for those who spent decades lobbying and working for the creation of a special center. So when Dickinson College, a small private college that houses the Carlisle School Digital Archives, announced on October 29th that it would be constructing the Jim Thorpe Center for the Futures of American Peoples, the unexpected news arrived like lightning over a dark horizon. It was indeed seen as a bright path to many, a reflection of the abbreviated meaning of Thorpe's name in the Sac and Fox language. When I read the news, it just came over me like a tidal wave. Thank God somebody was able to accomplish something, said Chanchali, who is a descendant of Jeffrey Chips, runs in the clouds, who was in the first class of Carlisle in 1879. I literally felt the earth shift, she said. I was just overwhelmed. The sentiment was shared by Barbara Landis, a local historian who for decades was the main source of information related to the school through her websites and research at the Cumberland County Historical Society. Along with anthropologist Genevieve Bell, Landis has compiled student lists and other resources in the early 1990s for school descendants, such as Weekly Step Back in Time with transcriptions of the old school newspaper, The Indian Helper. You're listening to Native Son on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. In my wildest dream, I would have never imagined this, Landis told ICT. I was ready to walk away from a lot of this, but now I feel so differently because the work is going to continue. For so many years, Native descendants have driven by Carlisle, but have not been able to stop because they just couldn't deal with being in this landscape that held so much pain, she said. And now there will be safeguards in place that are built into this whole project that will help them to deal with that. Past proposed settings for an educational facility or museum range from rescuing a historic farmhouse on the former school grounds to constructing a standalone heritage center with a facade that resembled one of the school's historic buildings. Landis even toyed with creating her own center when a neighboring Carlisle home went up for sale. Though Pennsylvania had once been home to William Penn's Holy Experiment, it had become an unwelcoming place for Native people by the mid-1700s, when his sons and grandson took over as governors and proprietors of Pennsylvania. The fraudulent walking purchase of 1737, massacre of the Conestoga in Lancaster in 1763, scalp bounties, vigilante groups, the French and Indian War, and political changes sent the message that indigenous people should move elsewhere. Combined with the latter shadow cast by the Carlisle School, it was difficult to attract tribal investment or enthusiasm of state and local governments. For Chancheli, the low point came in early 2025 when a California businessman offered to fund the Carlisle Indian School Project's Heritage Center they had been lobbying to build for more than 15 years, but only if a water park could also be constructed adjacent to help ensure the investment would be profitable. "I wasn't sure what I had just heard," Chancheli said. "I don't think I could face Indian country again if I accepted the idea. A water park. That's a cartoon." She continued, "I was tired of all these insensitive ideas that were strictly commercial, with no concern for the generational damage caused to Native communities by forced assimilation. Nothing Indian ever came out of Pennsylvania except Indians themselves, you know? They were kicked out."
Lightning strikes. The original center was designed as an initiative to better examine in the Native American boarding school experiences, create a Dickinson College major in Native American and Indigenous Studies, and to collaborate with Native American communities, scholars, and organizations on projects and symposiums. Darren Lone Fight, 43, a citizen of the Mandan and Arikara Nation, was the founding director of the Center for the Futures of Native Peoples. Filling the role as an interim until an executive director could be hired, the associate professor in American Studies saw himself as a grass dancer, one who dances on the powwow grass to flatten the surface and prepare it for the dancers who will come. Lone Fight, the first tenured Native professor at Dickinson, arrived at the college in 2020. He saw it as an appropriate time to redefine the college's complicated history with the Carlisle School and the origins of Indian boarding and residential school systems, an opportunity for the college to move to the forefront of the conversation with Indigenous leadership, acknowledgement, and vision, he said. Dickinson College can be an innovative hub and locutionary center for the conversation around boarding school reconciliation in ways that no other institution can, and how we handle this history is critical to the college's future and needs to be understood for the unique opportunity it presents to us to lead on an issue of national and international significance, Lone Fight said. In his Indigenous Futures initiative, he proposed to then Dickinson Dean and Provost Neil Weissman in the spring of 21. "The history will remain ours regardless of our actions," he said. "We can choose now how we tell this story, what actions we want to take regarding our history, and what and how we choose to articulate those actions to the world." Lone Fight saw the need to create a space where Native people could go and feel welcomed, and where the institution would be part of a college or university for stability and endurance in the years to come. Lone Fight did not dance alone. The actions of past caretakers, descendants, and advocates, the failed attempts for a center, had prepared the surface. All of these earlier efforts were incredibly important and meaningful to the moment that we're at, said Lone Fight. Then lightning struck when Samuel G. Rose and Dr. Amanda Kiramaya stepped in. Sam's life informs us all how to be better people, and that one person can indeed change the world, Dickinson President John E. Jones has said of Rose. In the fall of 24, Rose met with Kiramiah, only a few months after she had taken over Lone Fight's role as the center's executive director, to listen to her plans for the Center for the Future of Native Peoples and her requests for program funding. His reply was simple. "You're thinking too small," he said. "Think bigger." A program funding request soon transitioned to discussion of a building nestled in the heart of the campus. Lightning had struck in the form of the $20 million gift from Rose. "We so mistreated the Native American people," Rose said in a Dickinson College video produced at the Ground Blessing. "I thought we owed them some good things." Rose has also labored for the restoration of bison in the American West and supported the American Prairie Conservancy, RARE, and the Natural Resource Defense Council. Landis praised Kiramiah efforts. "She is connected to so many ancestors who were here," Landis said. "Imagine the variety of experience her own ancestors had. That can really color her methods for pulling all of this together. So I'm just thrilled. Nobody else could have done this." A complicated history. The relationship between Dickinson College and the Carlisle School is not new. There were 10 students who matriculated to the college after their days at the school, and about 75 other students who took classes at Dickinson's now-defunct prep school division. Frank Mount Pleasant, a 2-time Olympian and football star, was the only Carlisle student to graduate from the college, earning his degree in 1910. The relationship between the two institutions remains complicated, with Dickinson's support of Carlisle's assimilation efforts. It was not unusual for Dickinson professors to be guest lecturers at the school, and in 1879, the then college president, James Andrew Macaulay, delivered this sermon during the school's first Christmas service. Macaulay also created a charitable fund for the school, allowing donations to go directly to the school, bypassing the federal government. The college also holds the dishonor of bestowing honorary degrees to two of Carlisle School's superintendents, including its founder, Richard H. Pratt, whose philosophy can be summed up in his infamous phrase, "Kill the Indian and save the man." The Ground Blessing. The crowd gathered in a circle outlining the proposed site of the new building during the ceremony on November 8th. It takes a lot of bravery and a lot of courage for Indigenous people to come here to this very place, Carlisle, Pennsylvania, because it's a place of significant remembrance where what happened at the Indian school between 1879 until 1918 completely changed our communities forever. And there's a lot of living history here. It's like visiting your trauma. 4 of Jim Thorpe's descendants traveled from Oklahoma for the event. Jones, the college president, honored them as distinguished Dicksonians. His light endures, reaching far beyond his own community to inspire generations across cultures and nations, Jones said. He and his family hold a place of deep honor within the heart of Dickinson College. After the event, Thorpe's granddaughter, Mary Thorpe, expressed her feelings. "It means to me a chance for our people to heal," she said. "They're going to be able to come up here and experience their emotions and be able to go to a place where hopefully they can pray and heal, and that generational trauma will begin to fade for our people. I think my grandfather would be very honored and very happy about what's going on today." It was also an opportunity for those gathered to express their affection and gratitude to Samuel Rose for his vision of a center for Native people. He was presented with and wrapped in a blanket featuring a bison motif. Geraldine Tolino, 51, Dene, is the great-granddaughter of Tom Tolino, as his name was spelled as a student who will always be associated with the Carlisle School and its attempt to assimilate Native students. Tolino, a member of the advisory board of the center, spoke emotionally after the event. Like many, she saw the building as more than just brick and mortar. "It's so powerful and moving, and it was time," she said. "It was time to have a permanent residence available to the storytellers, to the knowledge keepers, and then also to have it as a place for healing for family, relatives, clan members, communities to come together and to come and pay homage, to do meditation, to do what they need to do to take care of themselves, for the ancestors, and for the future generations. She continued, I think in the past, for protective reasons, they went underground, so a lot of our ceremonies were done secretly. It is time not to mute those or censor them. It's time that we really address the hurt and trauma. The fall leaves on the surrounding canopy of trees painted the backdrop for the ceremony, with yellow and orange as they made their last autumnal stand before the change of seasons. It was a time for reflection, especially for those who had been involved in the decades-long process. Susan Rose felt gratitude and amazement that this historical moment was finally happening, a moment of honored lives lost and reclaimed. She also recalled those who paved the way to the day, the grass dancers Lone Fight referred to. I feel grateful for how this work has evolved, often as a labor of love, and to all those who continued this hard work, Susan Rose said. I'm grateful for the Center for the Future of Native Peoples and what may yet unfold. I am thankful to all the wonderful people I have met through this journey, thoughtful, creative, generous people who have worked together in so many fruitful ways, Indigenous people and communities, allies and institutions, sharing stories and sharing experiences, both painful and joyful. They felt that a bright path had been prepared with prayer and tears, consecrating the land. There was now a path to lead from the trauma of the past to find healing, a guided walkway to the future. When I think about the Thorpe Center for the Futures of Native Peoples, it's really meant to be a long-term home for the work that Indigenous people are already doing around governance and education and data and scholarship and art, Lone Fight said. It's not intended to be a memorial to a tragic past. You've been listening to Native Son on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I am your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Music is Land Back by Hallucination. Happy New Year, and join us for an upcoming episode.